My name's Butch Maslin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I want to thank Steve for those kind words and the committee for the opportunity and privilege of coming and taking part in the weekend. Connie, for the right amount of money, I'll divulge some of that stuff. This has been an absolutely wonderful weekend to come here and be part of this thing. You know, I come to these things sometimes and I just sit and I watch and I listen. And I'll tell you, each time I come here, I get a sense of gratitude for this fellowship and program of ours beyond anything I ever thought possible. All weekend long, I've been touched and moved by the stories that I've heard and the actions that I've seen people take. And I am truly happy to be here and to be in Nashville. Thanks, Steve, for took Sheldon and I and took us downtown. And I like Sheldon. I mean, I'd never seen anything like that. I mean, I'm a barroom drinker. I like bars. And we saw rows of bars with bands playing 9:30 in the morning, people in there drinking. I thought, if I'm ever going to have a relapse, it is going to be in Nashville, Tennessee. Huh, Sheldon? We are coming back here, buddy. You want to believe it? Oh, I love it. Now, I know you don't have any selfish alcoholics in Tennessee. But I'm going to tell you, in Canada, we have a lot of selfish alcoholics. A lot of selfish alcoholics there. And it is sometimes very easy for me to come to an event like this and have an incredible weekend. I get to hear AA and Al-Anon talks all weekend, get to have fellowship and dinners and food and dance and everything that goes with it, get in my car and drive home and sometimes forget all the hard work that's been done on our behalf. Because these things just don't happen. Somebody didn't come in here Thursday, turn on the lights, and this is what we got. There's been people getting together all year long planning this thing for us. There were people here long before you and I got here setting up and doing that. There'll be people here when you and I go home tearing down. There's been people who've sat out at registration all weekend long, gave their weekend up to be of service to us. And I want to thank those people from the bottom of my heart for your service. I have always been much more impressed by what I see you do rather than what I hear you say. I've always had the ability to sound better than I really am, including tonight. So I want to truly, truly thank you for that service. My home group is the Three Legacy Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Mondays and Thursdays just north of Toronto. If you're ever there, we'd love to see you. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I heard Sheldon say the other night that he loved his group. Sheldon, I love my home group. I used to say I belong to the best group in the world. I don't say that any longer. I find it arrogant of me. But I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place, where personal recovery is there, where our 12 steps are studied and taught. But there's more than that, where we operate under unity. We operate under the umbrella of our 12 traditions, where they're not just something that's stuck on the wall to be read, but we practice and teach them. I belong to a group that believes in service as a group, where we carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. We just don't open the door and hope they come, but we carry that message. We have committees that are at that detox every Monday and Thursday and bring those people to our meeting. We have a newcomers room that those new people can go into and find out what Alcoholics Anonymous is and what Alcoholics Anonymous isn't. What Alcoholics Anonymous does and what it doesn't do. We have committees that go in there every Tuesday and talk about a home group and sponsorship, what those things look like. I don't know about here, but we have the chairperson from the front of the rooms at meetings say, join a group and get a sponsor, brand new people from detox, like they somehow know what that means. I belong to a group that I want to thank the people who've welcomed us as we come into this room all weekend long, the guys in the red shirts, guys. Thanks very much for your service. Because I'm a guy that believes as a home group, that's probably the single most important thing that we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous. The single most important thing that we can do in Alcoholics Anonymous is to be at that door when that new guy or new gal walk through for their first meeting. Because an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean a damn thing to them. But a warm handshake, welcome, get a cup of coffee and come and sit here with us means a great, great deal. So I want to thank you for that. If you come to my home group, I will guarantee you there'll be six people at the bottom of those stairs to welcome you. I guarantee that when you leave our home group, I hope much more, but I will promise you this, you will leave feeling you have been in a warm, welcoming place. You will feel that you've been at a place that you would like to come back to. I belong to a group where there's enthusiasm. I love enthusiasm. I think enthusiasm is contagious. Don't you love it? Don't you love it? I've heard it in this room. Don't you love before the meeting starts? You hear that chatter in the room, the laughter in the room. You hear shout and laughing, huh? That buzz in the room. It's just like being in a bar. Just like being in a bar. It's beautiful. Everybody talking, nobody listening. Nobody listening. Alcoholics, the most self-centered people in the world. You ever tried to talk to somebody after the meeting? 10 people walk up and say, I don't mean to interrupt. Oh, yes, you do. I believe that enthusiasm is contagious. I believe when those new people come in, it is important that they hear that laughter in the room. I believe that it's important they come here and see we are not a glum lot. That there is much more to Alcoholics Anonymous than just not drinking and going to meetings. And I believe within the bottom of my heart, fellow alcoholics, I truly, truly believe that when a guy or gal walk into an environment where those things are in place, their chances of recovery become much greater than if they walk into a room where none of that's happening. So I am happy to be here in Strong Alcoholics Anonymous. I want to welcome those people in their first year. Those people in their first year, just stick your hand up for 1 minute. Let me see how many are. Look at them all. Wow. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I love those countdowns. I love watching that. I want to thank Bob for 54 years and 51 years. I have a deep love in my heart for the old timers. Deep, deep love in my heart for the old timers. Men and women that have been coming for 30 and 40 and 50 years, 54 years, made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon so it'd be here for a guy like me and those people here in their first year. I love them from the bottom of my heart. If you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would strongly urge you to get close to those men and women and learn from their experience, because we won't have them with us forever. My sponsor was an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 17th, 1958. And he was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous until the day he died on June the 10th, 2004. And when I say active, I mean active. He went places. He did things. One of the great joys of my AA life, and there's been many, is he took me with him. He took me everywhere. He took me all over the country with him. And I love traveling with that old man. And after I was sober for a little while and get asked to take part in one of these meetings, he knew how nervous I'd get before coming up here. He'd sit beside me in that chair and he'd rub my back. Aww. Oh. They cry when I do that at Al-Anon, Maria. And he'd say, I know it doesn't feel like it, kid, but I'm with you every step of the way. And I'd get up the front of the room and look out, and there he'd be sound asleep in his chair. So when I say I'm happy to be here, I really am truly happy to be here. Because alcoholics, they don't always get where they're going. Drinking alcoholics seldom get where they're going. But sometimes even sober alcoholics don't get where they're going. And I want to tell you a quick story about that. Let me just tell you, first of all, there's a time in my life I was not allowed in the United States of America. Let me add, nor should I have been. They said, we have enough people like you here already. We don't need to import them. But I applied to the United States Department of Justice for a waiver that would allow me to come into your great country. I have it right now. It's in my room in a suitcase. Beautiful piece of paper, Steve, that big. United States Department of Justice has my name on it. Allows me to come into the USA on humanitarian grounds. I don't even know what that means. But I have it there. And I don't know about any of you, but I from time to time can misplace things. So when I got that waiver, I made 25 photocopies just to be safe. The other thing, when I come here, they want to know where I'm going. They don't want to know I'm going to Tennessee, I'm going to Nashville. They want to know precisely where I am. I don't know why they want to know, but they seem to want to know. So anyway, I'm going to an AA thing a number of years ago now in Illinois. I get up early Friday morning to go to the airport. I like to come to the convention early. I come here to be a part of. I don't come here to talk. I come here to be a part of the conference. So anyway, I get up early. I get all my gear together. I look. I couldn't find my waiver. I said to my wife, I said, where's my waiver? Like it's her job to know where my waiver is. She said, I don't know, Butch. It's wherever you've put it. I said, no, it's not. You've lost it. She said to me, take one of those photocopies and get going. You're going to miss your flight. So I got that. I got all my gear. I go to Pearson International Airport. Please don't misunderstand what I'm about to say. Our Homeland Security do a wonderful job protecting our borders. God bless those men and women. But I think when they go to Border Patrol School, they teach them how not to smile. Serious people there. So anyway, I get there. I give the guy all my gear. I give him my waiver. He looks at me and says, this is a photocopy. I said, yes, sir. The original's at home for safekeeping. Lies just fall out of my mouth. That just comes natural to me. I need to think about truth. Lying just comes like that, rapid fire. He said, you have your I-94 form. I give him a form. He says, that's the wrong form. He said, you go over there, you fill out the proper form, and you've got to go see somebody about this photocopy because you cannot travel on a photocopy. I thought, I'm not going to Illinois today. Anyway, I go over to the counter, I fill out the proper form, and I'm watching because I got one of those keen alcoholic minds that you only hear about from the alcoholic. You did not hear about the keen alcoholic mind at the Al-Anon meeting today, did you, Palmer? But I watch and I wait till I see a more gentle man, like Sheldon, and I go to his line. And I go there, I give him the stuff, and he says to me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Illinois. He says, what's your purpose of business? I said, I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous. He said to me, what address are you staying at? Oh, Jesus. I forgot to get the address. I said to him, I don't know. He said, you don't know where you're staying? I said, no, sir, I don't. I said, but it's okay because somebody's going to come and pick me up at the airport and take me there. He says to me, who's picking you up at the airport? I said, I don't know. He said, let me get this straight. Somebody you don't know is picking you up, taking you somewhere you don't know where you're going. I said, yes, sir, that's correct. He says to me, what did you say your purpose of business was? I said, I'm going to talk to a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says to me, what are you going to talk about? And before I could answer him, he holds up his hands and says, hold it. Let me guess. You don't know. So I'm happy to be here tonight. On September the 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. Now that should tell you something right there, shouldn't it? My mother's house. Huh? Somewhere every 33-year-old self-respecting alcoholic should be is with mummy. Two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. Its purest form. They made the effort to leave their homes that night. They drove, came to my mother's house, and talked to me about their drinking. They did not talk to me about my drinking. They did not tell me I shouldn't drink, I shouldn't drug, I should go to treatment. They didn't tell me nothing. Those two men came to my mother's house that night, talked to me about their drinking, and told me what had happened in their lives since they came to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. Would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with them? I was a helpless, hopeless, chronic alcoholic. I'd been running the streets drinking whiskey and sticking needles in my arm since I'd been 13 years old. And those two men came to my mother's house that night, took me to my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been with you ever since that night. I don't know how to explain that to you, what to tell you about that, but I want to tell you this, that I am extremely grateful for that experience. Because I know that's not everybody's experience that comes to Alcoholics Anonymous. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking many times, and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and never come back to AA. But that is my experience, and I'm grateful for it. Well, the other thing I'm very grateful for is I've loved coming here right from that first night, right from that first meeting. There was something in that room that night that attracted me. I didn't know what it was. then I know what it was tonight. It was hope. I left there with a little bit of hope. And I've been coming to meetings ever since that night, and I've loved coming to AA. I love going to meetings. I love going to my home group. I love coming to conferences, service days, workshops. I love the story of an alcoholic, and the seedier the better. So I have no regrets since I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. I really don't have any other than one. I do have one regret, and that is that I didn't get to drink with some of you people. I don't know if you've ever thought that or not, but I've walked away from some people thinking I liked a little drink with that guy. We're a cast of characters in this outfit, aren't we? You couldn't make some of this stuff up that goes on around here. This is the greatest show on earth. I'll tell you, I went to an AA thing a number of years ago up in Sault Ste. Marie, up in northern Ontario on the American-Canadian border. Little roundup I was going to go. I got up Saturday morning. I was going to talk there that night, and I picked up the local paper. I like to read about the community I've been invited to come to. Only seems fitting. And I'm sitting there reading on the front page of this paper. This is a true story. Well, I hope my whole story's true, but this part is for sure. There was an article of a man, they had arrested him coming across the American-Canadian border drunk on a stolen street sweeper. Oh. Oh! And my first thought was, I'd like to drink with him. Huh? Anyway. I was 4 years old, four or five years old. My mom had me downtown at the Five and Dime. She's doing a little shopping and that and there, and she looked around. She couldn't see me. She started looking around the store to find me. She couldn't find me anywhere. She's up and down the aisles. She's getting a little frightened. She went and looked out the front door of the store. I'm not on the street now. She's scared. My dad worked at a little downtown bank. She went down to the bank. She said, Bob, Butch is lost. I can't find him. My dad comes over the counter. They're up and down the street. They're getting scared now. Something's happened. We had a little local police station, a small community. They went to that police station. They went in. There was a guy at the desk. My mom says, we've lost our little boy. The guy behind the desk said, is he a little blonde-haired boy with a red shirt? Mom, I was, relief, huh? They found him. My mom says, yeah, that's him. He said, well, we had him. We had him. We've lost him. And he took the keys to the cells with him. Now, I'm going to tell you, there was a time 20 years later, I wished I had those keys back. I don't know, 10 years old, 11 years old, I'm in classroom at school, and the teacher at the front of the room, she announces there's going to be a walkathon. You know where you walk and you get people to pledge money and the poor people get the money. She said, and I want you to come up here and get your sheets to get your pledges on. Well, I'm just sitting in the back of the class where the smart kids sit, and I made a conscious decision from the time I got to the back of the class to the front of the class that I'm taking two sheets. One for the poor people, one for me. I figure if I'm walking, I'm getting some of the cash. That is how I was to go through the next 20 years of my life. Lying, cheating, and stealing. Some sort of sense of entitlement. That I didn't need to do an honest day's work for an honest day pay. That I could just go and take what I wanted whenever I wanted from whoever I wanted. And I haven't even started drinking yet. And that's how I was to go through life. I'm 25 years old. And my wife had thrown me out of our home. And I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving at that time. It's important that I say that to you, as much as I was capable of loving at that time. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells of apartment buildings in downtown Toronto. I just went from building to building. I had a new address each night. And at nighttime, I was under that stairwell. In the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer. Out in those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I need to get to do the things I need to do. I hear people in AA talk about AA luggage. Matching green garbage bags? Huh? I didn't have any AA luggage. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. Gonna be cool at any expense. I'm 25 years old. I'm living in stairwells. I got the clothes on my back. And nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Because I use and I abuse everybody that I come in contact with. I'm in the East End of Toronto one night. I'm all jacked up and nowhere to go, as I said. And my wife and I owned a home at what they call the beaches in Toronto, down near the lakefront. And we had a screened-in porch in that couch and that there and a couple wicker couches. I thought, I'm going to slip into that porch and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out, and I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum. And you will never change. And if you cared anything about me, you would get up and get out of here, and please don't ever come back because I can't stomach to look at you. And it was a hot summer day, and I'm hungover, and I'm dirty, and I'm dope sick, and I'm heart sick. And I walk down to what they call the boardwalk down on the lakefront. And I'm sitting down there on a park bench in that condition. And over where the boys were sitting now, there was another bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting on that bench eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. Huh? The big shot, the dope dealer, everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody on the face of this earth wanting anything more to do with me. And I had a thought, a clarity at that moment, as clear as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment that that park bench or somewhere just like it was where I was going back to every single time. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I've always been a hustler and a talker and a wheeler dealer. I knew I'd put a deal together. I'd come up with some cash. I always did. But I knew at that moment that that park bench or somewhere like it was where I was going to. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with a horror story because I don't believe it would serve much purpose. You see, if you're alcoholic of my type, you already know it never gets better. It always gets worse. And I had 8 more years on those streets. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. And I joined a group. And I got a sponsor. And I did the things you guys told me to do. Forget this suggested crap, the stuff you told me to do. You know where I was a number of years ago now? Huh, Maria? I was in Rome, Italy. Oh, Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel, looking at the paintings of Michelangelo from hundreds of years before, my wife standing beside me, and the tears started to roll down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on the park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from the folks we've listened to here all weekend long to where they sit tonight. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dregs of society. Many of us here tonight, our own families didn't want us any longer. Yet here we sit this weekend, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we were to where we sit tonight? How does that happen? Because it's not supposed to happen for people like you and I. But you know how it happens, don't you? And it happens one way and only one way. And that is through the grace of God. Through a loving God that you introduced me to. That you introduced me to through the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous and a fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. You sure want to believe that I'm grateful to be here and be a part of this. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I don't know. But I said to my sponsor one day, because when I got sober, they were talking a lot about dysfunctional families. I said, Bob, you think my family's dysfunctional? He said, you are in it. Cruel sponsors, cruel. But I know this, there was a lot of parties in my home, a lot of drinking. I don't think my parents were alcoholic, but I think they were described in our book as hard drinkers. There was always parties. As a little boy, they could let me play bartender. I could take them beers and take away the empties. They'd let me have swigs. They'd say, isn't he cute? And I loved that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was 4. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol, 12 years old or so. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur. 2 bottles of Old Sailor. I think that's comparable to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And I'll tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank that wine, got drunk, puked, and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking. All downhill from there. I don't know if you have this even in America or not, but I hear people in these meetings at home talk about coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, hoping Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help them become a social drinker. You hear that here, Scott? Came to Alcoholics Anonymous, hoping Alcoholics Anonymous is going to help them become a social drinker. Let me tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. Weird. You ever watch a social drinker drink, they let the ice melt in their glass. Sick drinking. You ever drink with a social drinker, it's enough to make you puke. Isn't it? You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no, thank you. Starting to feel it. Really? I thought that's when you put it in overdrive. Social drinkers. My wife's a social drinker. My beautiful wife, Dee. Connie and Steve know Dee real good. She's the most beautiful little girl in the world. She's at home right now, praying for me. Or for you. But my wife's a social drinker. A little while ago, I'm at home. We have an open concept home, Joe. I'm sitting there, and I see Dee's in the kitchen. She's got a bottle of wine on the counter with a funnel in it. I thought, what's she doing with that funnel? So I watched her. Sheldon, she took a glass of wine, started pouring it in that funnel. I said to her, hey, what are you doing over there? She says to me, I put too much in the glass. Oh, she said, okay. I said, don't you ever do that again. I'll divorce you, social drinker. I'm a barroom drinker. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic, just drank differently than me. You know, you hear those people? They get the bottle, go in, lock the door, put on the country western music. I don't identify. Barroom drinker. Love bars. Love them. I like opening the door to a bar. That smoke will billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. I like neon. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like neon. That's why I stare to those casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love drinking in your country. I love it. This place would have been good. But I love it. You got many more here than we got in Canada. I call them juke joints. You know those divey, scuzzy little rat hole joints? Huh? Little neon sign says cocktails. Oh, oh. I went to an AA thing a number of years ago. I decided to drive my wife come with me in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're driving this little town. I'm going through this little town, Scott, and I'm driving down the main street. I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm back in my car. My wife said to me, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. Guys, there it was. This divey little rat hole joint had a neon sign. Said, stop for one. Stay till one. Oh, oh. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. Absolute work of art. Anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking tonight other than to quickly share with you what drinking does for an alcoholic of my type. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. Those folks that are new tonight, I want to give you a little heads up. You're going to go to AA speaker meetings. You're going to hear somebody get up and say, I don't like drunkalogs. When you hear that, buckle up. Buckle up. You're about to listen to 50 minutes of drinking every time. It's important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous for the purpose of identification. That's the greatest tool that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous work. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. But I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't matter if I'm drinking Dom Perignon or Aqua Shave. Doesn't matter if I'm drinking in the Fairmont Hotel or under a bridge in a box. It's what drinking does for me that's important. And that's what I quickly want to share, particularly for those guys and gals here tonight who knew. And the things that I'm going to share with you, I did not know this when it was happening. I didn't know this at the time. I saw it. You helped me see it. I saw it in inventory. I saw it as you took me back through my life and helped me see my life honestly for the very first time ever. But as I look back today, I remember being a young boy in school. I don't know, 10, 11 years old, I'd be in that classroom. And the teacher would be at the front of the room and she'd ask a question. And she'd start looking around that room to see who she's going to ask to answer that question. And my head would go down like this. Oh, Jesus, don't let her ask me. Because I knew if she made eye contact with me, she's going to ask me to answer that question. And I don't want to answer the question. It doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question. I don't want to answer the question. Huh? When I went to school, we used to have to do book report. Get up in front of the whole classroom full of kids. No good. No good. I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night, I'm sick, I can't go to school today, please don't make me go. Because I want to tell you something. I would be absolutely terrified, terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. Where I go, what I do, who I hang out with is all based on a comfort level. I don't know about any of you guys, but I every now and then will get goofy. I go on about a 5-day run. I come home on a Sunday after being gone for 5 days. Michael, my wife would be sitting there waiting. I walk in that house, I'd say, sweetheart, that's it. No more. I mean, no, I know I said this last week, but I'm never, I swear my ma's life, I'm never having another drink of whiskey as long as I live. That was Sunday. I'd wake up Monday. I'd think to myself, I shouldn't have said that. I should not have said that. I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad, bad deal. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about the reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception, and that dance is going to start, and I don't have anything in me. And I'm telling you something, my hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place, and it is just horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a couple drinks into me, or I got to get out of there, because I can't stand the way I feel. Every decision I made was based on that fear. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything, and I don't even know it. We talk an awful lot at these topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight. Huh? I prefer to call it hate. Hate. Now, I know you're not that sick in Nashville, but in Toronto we are. Hate. I'm the type of alcoholic driving my car. I'm at a red light and I'm on the nod by now. Huh? Oh, and that light would turn green and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of my car, go back there, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar and crack his skull open. I know some of you nice people never thought thoughts like that, but I do. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking rage. I'm talking a white rage. I'm talking the kind of rage that I don't have 10 minutes before and I don't have 10 minutes after. But I have a rage inside of me that comes out every now and then, and I can't control it. And I say things to people or do things to people I never wanted to say or do. Do you want to know who takes the brunt of my rage? It happens behind closed doors. The people who love me take the brunt of my anger. Because you see, I am constantly seeking your approval. So you don't display that rage out there trying to be the nice guy. You keep it for the people whose approval you think you already have. Lonely. Lonely. We will know a loneliness such as few people know. Huh? I'm 25 years old. I'm staying at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday night, all jacked up. And a train pulled up and the doors opened and a young couple my age got off that train holding hands. And they walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I saw that couple and I felt sad. I thought, why can't I be like those people? Why has all the trouble got to keep happening in my life? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night. It's just getting dark and a warm breeze. And I'd walk down that street and I'd see the nice homes. And I'd see the television on inside and the families in there. And I feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why has all the trouble got to keep happening in my life time and time again? Guys, from as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. Huh? If I was at this bar, I should be at that bar. We're at this party, go to the other party. I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. I get one of those double vodkas or whatever I was doing that day, it was just like... Huh? I don't know if you remember that. Here, I'll give you one more. I did that in a meeting one night. Two guys got up and left. You should see when I do that at detox. Oh, they're on the ceiling. It's beautiful. I have 3 or 4 of those double vodkas, and those sweaty hands go away. That knot in my gut subsides. The rage vanishes and the loneliness disappears. And I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I am moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies and I'm sitting with my buddies and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on. And at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect. And I get an immediate, not in 28 days, an immediate sense of ease and comfort. Same wedding, same hall, same people, same music, same food, same everything. But you put four vodkas in me and my perception of reality changes. And I get that immediate sense of ease and comfort. That is why I drink whiskey, because I like the effects it produces. But I am an alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people that drink it, called a phenomenon of craving. I'd start drinking, I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka, and I'd smash up my car. I go out after work for a few beers with Sheldon, I go on a 10-day bender, I get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread, I run into Joe, I come home 3 months later, my wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on, I don't want to stop, I got no money, so I'm stealing yours. And now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was crashed cars, broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jails. We looked at drinking. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, which if you just quit drinking whiskey and sticking needles in your arms, you'd be okay. And there was times I wasn't drinking whiskey, and guess what? I wasn't okay. As a matter of fact, I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see, and they were well-meaning, was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking. But those well-meaning people didn't understand how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't know. I would love to stand up here and tell you I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money, work was thinking of promoting me, and my wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Huh? Every now and then I hear some moron from the front of one of these rooms say things like, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. And every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my back was against the wall. My boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky, picky. He said, you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everyone's going to be okay. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office. Was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left? Huh? Oh, yeah. He's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another hotel room in another town drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the reason, that morning I knew the jig was up. You know when you know, huh? You used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars. I don't know what that means. I will lie when the truth would serve me better. I am a pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic that goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. I do. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, good game, Butch, good game. So I knew I had to come up with something good this morning. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it and it came to me. I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic. I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody tonight who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. We're just glad to see you. And maybe, by the grace of God, something someone says, something you hear, something you read, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon can happen in your life. And you too can go on to live a happy and useful life like so many men and women here have been able to do. Just keep coming. Just keep coming. And as I said in the beginning, I've been a blessed man since the day I come to AA. Blessed man. Deep love in my heart for those old timers. Deep, deep love. blessed man. I've heard people say in Alcoholics Anonymous, you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something. I have some people on pedestals. Giants in our program, many of them in this room tonight. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. The greatest gift my sponsor ever gave me. The greatest thing Bob Dobson ever did, it wasn't some profound thing he pulled out of the book, some divine spiritual wisdom he laid on me. The greatest gift that old man ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. He allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters, it was said, in our defects rather than our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life, none more than my own sponsor. I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say, if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. Idiot. I didn't like my sponsor, I loved my sponsor, and I love my sponsor today. You see, you were the first people who helped me understand what my problem was. Because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't know what my problem was. I didn't have a clue. I don't know about you, but I had been told what my problem was. My wife told me what my problem was. My parents had told me what my problem was. Judges had told me what my problem was. Psychiatrists, I'd heard all my life. But just quit drinking. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. Drinking's your solution. How I feel when I'm sober is my problem. Sober, I am restless, irritable, and discontent. Sober, I can't seem to control my emotional natures. Sober, I'm prone to misery and depression. Sober, I can't seem to make a living or be of use to others. Sober, I'm full of fear and unhappy. That's how I am sober. Friends, that is a spiritual malady. That is an unmanageable life. And you told me that if I didn't do something about that, if I didn't treat that, you see, an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating that illness and sitting in AA meetings does not treat alcoholism. That's a great myth that kills many alcoholics. The meetings are where the solution is. The meetings are where the fellowship is. The 12 steps Alcoholics Anonymous treat alcoholism. Didn't have a clue. And an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating that illness, sober, will get so restless, irritable, and discontent that eventually, and that's the key word, eventually, I will get so in such a place that I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have lost the power in choice. That is the difference between me and the hard drinker who goes out and gets drunk on the weekend and goes to work Monday as described in our book. But I am alcoholic. I have lost the power in choice when it comes to alcohol. So not treating that illness and not drinking, I will get to a state where I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. Either drink again or blow my brains out. Most of us drink again. But we all know somebody who's paid the supreme price, don't we? Didn't have a clue. Selfishness and self-centeredness, you told me, was the root of my troubles. The root of my troubles. I didn't have a clue. If you'd have asked me the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, Butch, what kind of a guy are you? You know what I'd have said to you? I'm a good guy. I'm a good guy. And you could have hooked me up to a lie detector test and asked me that question, and that needle would not budge. Because I believe that. You want to know why I believe that? You see, I've always judged myself by my intentions. You see, my intentions were always good. Unfortunately, the world judges us by our actions. And my actions and intentions never lined up. Selfishness and self-centeredness, the root of my troubles. I didn't do an inventory and go, my, 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 you haven't been a very nice boy. I did not need to inventory to find out I was a lion, cheat, and thief. I knew that. But I had no idea of the depth of my self-centeredness. I had no idea of how self manifests in my life in many different ways, and I don't even know it's ever happening. And you told me above everything else, that I must be rid of this selfishness or else it would kill me. And there seems no way of getting rid of it without God's help. And you told me that was the purpose of these 12 steps. That was the purpose of these principles. Through some actions that I start to take, some principles that I try to live by, that I can get to a, connected to a power greater than myself that would solve my problem. Didn't have a clue. Thank God for sponsorship. I am the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes that without strong sponsorship, our chances of recovery are very, very slim. I thank God for that. I thank God. Didn't have a clue. And you took me and you started to take me through this process that we're not going to talk about tonight. You got some dancing and stuff to do, some important stuff. But I thank God for your direction. I thank God for that, because I cannot do this on my own. One of the greatest disservices we do is give a new guy a big book and say, here, go do this, and we kill him. We kill him. I thank God for the people who came into my life. I thank God I didn't hear some of this quit-lit crap. Oh, just don't drink and go to the meetings. You'll be okay. Huh? Isn't that a nice little out for me? Now that my life's going good, I can sit at home in my nice house and watch my flat-screen TV on a Saturday night? No. The people who came into my life said, kid, you have a lot more wrong with you than drinking. You come with us and we're going to show you what's wrong. And more importantly, we're going to show you what you got to do to get well. And you started to walk me through. You walked me through that inventory. You took me through those steps. You helped me and guided me through those amends. One of the great freeing processes in my life. Sheldon talks so good about that amends process. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I'll share this with you. For my entire life, before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and today if I'm not in fit spiritual condition. You see, my entire life, I remember being in school and they had the kids in school who did good and belonged to the teams and the clubs and all that. I hated those kids. I hated them. I didn't know why then. I know why today. I didn't feel as good as those kids. Then they had the kids behind the school were starting to cut up and drinking and partying and carrying on. I hung out there because I felt a little sharper than most of those kids. But I will tell you, every single person I ever met, the very first thing I do when I meet you, I size myself up. First thing I do. And I am always, every single time, either less than or better than. But never, ever the same as. And when I do that, I separate myself from you, I separate myself from God, and I run a life on self-will that can hardly ever be a success. Huh? I thank God for that amends process that you took me through that, and today I can be a free man. Free man. Steve talked the other day, I'm feeling freer than I've ever felt. Today I can just be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, no better than and no less than. I can look you in the eye today, I don't have to look at the ground. Today I can just be one of God's kids, no better than and no less than. That is a freeing process for a guy who is wrapped up in self his entire life. And I thank you for taking me through that. And something that's been very important as time has gone on, we've talked a lot about in the workshops that Kent and Joe have done so wonderful this weekend. And that I've listened to people debate in a meeting for 45 minutes whether they were recovered or recovering. Jesus, Murphy. Smoke starts to come out my ears. Are you kidding me? Our book is very clear about that. Very clear about that. Huh? But I thank God where you showed me in that book where it says it is easy to let up on a spiritual program and to rest on our laurels, and if I do, I'm headed for trouble. Huh? Because I am not cured of alcoholism. Not cured. What I have is a daily reprieve that's contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And some days I can think my spiritual condition is much better than it is. Huh? Some days I can mistake activity for spiritual work. Sometimes I can run around frantically being busy, but not taking spiritual actions in my life. And I'll tell you, it was talked about so much today that self starts to rebuild in my life very slowly and very subtly. And all of a sudden, money, property, and prestige start to be a part of my life again. And I want to enjoy a certain reputation in Alcoholics Anonymous. Huh? I disguise greed for trying to get ahead, for working hard. And I don't ever know that I'm doing it. I don't have a clue I'm doing it. You see, I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to be a GSR. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to go to a detox. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to make coffee at my home group. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to sponsor a lot of guys. I stay spiritually fit today by the actions that I take today. And I want to tell you that I'm as active or more active than I've ever been in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have never stopped since the day I come here. But I want to tell you I have a lot more to lose tonight than I did on September the 21st, 1989. You sure want to believe that. I'm staying right here with you guys. Right here with you guys. And you introduced me to a loving God. Huh? The great reality of our life today. The great reality. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was never a disbeliever. If you said to me, Butch, do you believe in God? I would have said to you, yes, I do. Now, it had as much meaning in my life as the price of coffee beans in Brazil tonight. But I was not a disbeliever. Somebody was talking, I think Terry talked, or somebody today. It gets a little blurry after a while, But God, to me, was way up in heaven. Huh? Long hair, beard, big stick. Charlton Heston. And if you are good, good things happen. And if you are bad, bad things happen. Huh? And it was talked about as well, but Chuck Chamberlain used to say that we have one problem and only one problem. That's all you and I have is one problem. And from that one problem comes all our other problems, but we just have one. And that is a conscious separation from God. And if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your life? You see, you were the first people that said to me deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And in the final analysis, it is only there that he may be found. And the central fact of my life today is my Creator has entered my heart and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. Huh? You've done that for me. You've given me that. I think Sheldon talked about it and stuff, but you know that time. Don't you love the language of Bill Wilson in our big book? Huh? Just love it. Divinely inspired. Divinely inspired. I love that. I love reading. We were at my home group on Thursday, and I'm going to get off track here, I know it. But I was at our home group on Thursday night, we're reading We Agnostics. And a couple of people in the meeting said, that's my favorite chapter. I always say that when we're reading that. Other times, the other chapter is my favorite chapter. But that night it was a favorite chapter. But I said, it came to my consciousness. I said, when I read that or I hear you read that, I get goose. I feel. Why? Because I'm hearing absolute truth. Absolute truth. Huh? That we agnostics, I love that so much. From just a willingness. Again, Sheldon did that so good. Just that willingness. To that last paragraph at the end of that book when it talks in the story and where that guy had started with that willingness, and then I come to a place where I stand in the presence of all power and all love. That is a long way from just being willing to stand in that power. And you know that time when you know? Don't you love Bill's language? When we suddenly realize that God is doing suddenly. Not just, but suddenly. You know, we talk a lot about Bill's bright light experience, but I don't know that ours is any different. Sometimes it just takes a little longer. But you know that time, huh, Sheldon? You know that time. When I drive down that road sometimes coming to be with you, and that sun is shining and I'm driving down that highway, I stick a little Leonard Skinner in. Little Leonard Skinner. Little Freebird. And the tears start to run down my face. And I know. And I am conscious. I am conscious of the presence of God. And we go from believing to knowing. We have that spiritual experience. It's not an idea anymore. It is real. And when you get me connected to that power, life starts to change. And this thing changes to a design for living. That we go stop looking at self and start looking out. That our real purpose here, we have a primary purpose, singleness, but our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and those about us. That's what we have been doing. That's what we've been doing. Huh? And you've introduced me through the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous and listening to your stories. That's why we tell our stories in Alcoholics Anonymous. That is the purpose of an AA talk. In our own language and from our own point of view, how we are able to find a power greater than ourselves. And the great paradox, all this, if I want to keep it, I got to give it away. Huh? That nothing ensures me immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. The occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon my constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life through unselfish acts and helping others, I will surely drink when we hit those certain low spots. If you have come to Alcoholics Anonymous and were fortunate enough to stay and you're sober a couple of years and everything's going wonderful, buckle up. Buckle up, because life will happen. And when it does, I better be connected to power. You see, there is a big difference between believing and I can go to any treatment center, any detox center, and say to those people, you believe in a higher power? Oh, yes, sir, higher power. And next week, most of them are drunk. There is a big difference in believing and being connected to. That's why I'm a fan of moving these guys through this work as quickly as I can. Not this 4-hour stuff, but as quickly as I can. We've been richly blessed, haven't we? We've listened to it all weekend long. AA, Al-Anon, we'll hear tomorrow, Georgia. We've been richly blessed. Richly blessed, honey. Richly blessed. If you and I haven't been given enough already, if we haven't been given enough already, you and I are then given the ability to change people's lives. That's not an ego statement. That is a statement of gratitude. That is a statement of humility. You and I, when armed with these facts about ourselves, that's the purpose of these steps. That's the purpose of inventory. Armed with these facts and have this solution, are able to make the difference in a few short hours when nobody else was able to. And until such an understanding happens, little or nothing can be done for the alcoholic. We have been uniquely gifted to help others. Incredible gift we've been given. It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. I don't know if you do this here, but when at home when you celebrate your birthday, your 10-year birthday, you can pick the speaker and the players in the meeting and stuff, and you get your cake and that. Some family come, maybe some people from work come. They don't know anything about AA. Kent never been to AA. Some monkey like me gets up here and says things like, yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac. I picked it up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning and totaled it at 10. Ha, 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 ha. We laugh. Laugh. Huh? I've been in 18 treatment centers. I've had 27 shock treatments. I'm still twitchy. We laugh. Ha, ha, ha. We got a buddy from California talks about spilling a bottle of whiskey in his bed and then sucking it out of the sheets. Ha, ha, ha. We laugh. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking? Christ. We laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. You know what it says after that, don't you? Huh? Why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we've recovered. We've recovered and been given the power to help others. God's power, not my power. Uniquely gifted. Everything that is good in my life is because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Anything that I am or ever hope to be. My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose. None. I don't know what your life was like. It's none of my business. But I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk. In trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. My life focused around drinking and drugs. I deal so I can do. I work so I get money to drink. And all the people in my life are the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning, no purpose. I go to a detox at home every Monday. I've been going there for over 25 years. Not because I'm wonderful. It's the way I've been taught. And I go there on Sundays when I'm in town. We have a big speaker meeting, a couple hundred people. I like to take new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today, but I happen to think it's good. Anyway, I go there one day. There's a guy in there in bad shape. I'm not talking detoxing, hungover. I'm talking physically. I thought, this guy might die. He might not make it. Well, I figured to myself, he can die at the meeting as easy as he can die here. Dying's dying. You got to do it somewhere. Let's go.
So I took him to the meeting. We had a good meeting. I had a good meeting anyway. After the meeting, he and I spent a couple hours together talking about this design for living, this practical program action. I left him. I never saw him again. I'm sitting in a meeting one day, and I see a guy coming across the room. I could see he's headed for me. Clean-cut looking guy, though, had a shirt, pair of slacks on. Came walking up. He said, "Butch, you probably don't remember me." I said, "I'm sorry. I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people." He says, "My name's Ziggy." I said, "Holy smokes." That's not really what I said. That's what I'm saying here. He said, "You remember me?" I said, "I remember you. It's the guy. And he's looking good." He said, "Butch, I just wanted to come and thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning." He said, "I haven't had a drink since that day. It's almost been a year." I said, "Congratulations." He said, I was wanting to ask a favor of you." I said, "If I can do it, I will." He says, "Will you come and talk at my one-year AA birthday?" I said, "I'd be honored to do that." I went to a group a number of years ago. I got up to talk and that, and I started to cry. I couldn't get started. And I'll tell you why. I looked out and there sitting at the table in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was getting his 15-year medallion. We're not done. You know where I was 3 Sundays ago? Ziggy's 25. Took him to his first meeting, talked at his 1 year, talked at his 5 year, talked at his 10 year, talked at his 15 year, talked at his 20 year, talked at his 25 year. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose? My life is so rich. It is so full. I got a little gal at home right now that I love as much as life itself. And we have a life beyond anything I ever dreamt possible. Anything I ever dreamt possible. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do it. I could do it. I'll wait for time. Okay. I could do it. Everything in my life that's good is because Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything, everything, everything. Incredible deal. Incredible deal. I want to share one last story with you for a purpose. To those new folks that are here. You see, guys, I and gals, I remember like it was yesterday how it feels to get that book tonight, to be that first day, to be in a detox, to be in, I know. That's why I work with new guys. That's why I go to a detox. I don't ever want to forget what it's like. And I know that you come here and you hear folks get up here all weekend long and they've got nice clothes on and they've got a life today and families today and careers today. And I know that that sounds like 1 million miles away for you. I know that you think that sounds wonderful, but I think that at times you think that it's never going to happen to me. I want to talk to you about the power that's here. You see, we come here to carry a message of hope. We don't come here to wear a false face. We don't come here to make you think that we don't have problems in our life and struggles in our life like other people do. Huh? But I just want to share this with you. It says in the 12 and 12, I'm paraphrasing, please don't correct me after, that self-examination, prayer, and meditation, when taken individually, produce a good result. But when logically interwoven, form an unshakable foundation for life. An unshakable foundation for life. Some time ago, our 5-year-old granddaughter was diagnosed with leukemia. Steve met my granddaughter. And she had to go to Sick Kids Hospital, Children's Hospital. And she spent 5 months having chemotherapy and a spinal tap once a week. That little girl never complained one single solitary day. And the cancer went into remission and she came home. And 3 or 4 months later, the cancer came back, and it was worse. And they said, "We're going to give her the strongest chemotherapy, the strongest radiation, and she needs to have a bone marrow transplant. She has a 30% chance to live." And she spent 5 more months in there, and we didn't have a perfect match for the bone marrow. And so they were going to do a stem cell transplant. They said, "She's going to be in isolation for 4 months, and she is going to be very sick." They literally wipe your DNA out of you. Everything's gone. Well, our daughter had gotten pregnant in the hopes of having a baby and the baby being a match, because a family member is a 25% chance of a match. None of the family was a match, so odds were. Leah got pregnant, had the baby. Matthew was not a match. So they're going to do the stem cell transplant. They did the stem cell transplant. And they had never done that with somebody who had just given birth. And there was something about that that did something to the stem cell that made this thing work incredibly wonderful. They couldn't believe it. Sick Kids Hospital was talking to hospitals all over the world about this. Our granddaughter was in isolation for 4 weeks and was hardly sick. And she came home. The cancer was gone. And 4 months later, the cancer came back. And they said, there's no more treatment. You take your daughter home and you have your time with her. Maybe 6 months. And we had that time with Sarah. Our granddaughter met Justin Bieber. Our granddaughter met Katy Perry. Our granddaughter went in a race car. The Metro Zoo brought the animals to the house because for Christmas they knew Sarah wasn't going to see Christmas. She was getting sicker. And they brought the reindeer and everything right to the house, and we had Christmas right at the house with the reindeer. She had a wonderful time in those things. And then we buried our 7-year-old granddaughter. And that's a horrible thing. That's a horrible thing. Somebody said, how could God let that happen to a 7-year-old girl? God had absolutely nothing to do with Sarah passing. But the moment she passed, he had everything to do with that. And our family has an unshakable foundation for life. And I've got a sponsor. And I've got a home group. And I got a bunch of guys and gals in my life. You see, in those darkest hours, in those times when you feel life can't go on, when you feel your heart's going to break in two, that's when the men and women in your home group and a power that you've been connected to will pick you up and carry you home every single time. I want to thank you for the opportunity and privilege of being here this weekend, Steve, and the committee. I want to thank you people for your kindness and patience in listening to me tonight. You know, it says in our book for the new people, the bright spot in our lives will to be with one another. Huh? Isn't it so? The bright spot in our lives will be with one another. To watch others get well and them in turn help others. To watch a fellowship grow up around us and to have a host of friends. This is an experience you'll not want to miss. If you are new, don't listen to this, don't drink and go to meetings, crap. You get a home group and you get a sponsor and you come with us and we'll show you what you got to do. Huh? You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in. None of us know for sure, do we? You see, just because we get sober, become members, Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many, many years, including first thing this morning, I say to that God that you've introduced me to, I say, I sure would appreciate it if you see fit to keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous another day. Because, my dear friends, there is no place in this world I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you, and God bless you.
Thank you, Butch, and thank you.